Okay.
I'm Ben Stiller.
Hi, I'm Ben Stiller.
I guess you're wondering.
And I'm Judd Apatow.
The show's about. Well,
and I guess you're wondering what this show's about. This is weird. We're watching the pilot episode.
Hopefully funny.
I haven't watched this for a long time.
I haven't watched this. That is my friend from high school, Michael Strauss, with the walkie-talkie. And that's writer Bruce Kirschbaum, who previously wrote for Fridays and the Donnie Marie Show.
Yeah, we were talking about him on another episode commentary that he, Bruce, was brought in by the network basically to make sure that we could kind of conform to what you have to do when you have a show on the air, right? Like, we both, Judd and I, didn't have any experience with running a television show.
Anybody else?
Did you have any experience? You were young at the time. Back then you were, what, 26?
I guess I was, like 24, 25, and you had experience because you had done a different version of the Ben Stiller Show on MTV.
Yeah.
And I had been writing specials.
Very successfully, I might add. 13 episodes.
Back when they wanted to weave comedy and videos.
Yeah, they were called VidComs. And it was Julie Brown. Not downtown Julie Brown. Regular Julie Brown.
OG Julie Brown.
Right. And who else had a show? Anyway, MTV was experimenting with putting on, other programming back at the time, before it was all other programming, which it is now. And they gave us a chance to do this sketch show, and Jeff Kahn, who was one of the writers on this show, was on it with me, and John O'Donohue, who became kind of a semi-regular on our show, who was an ex-New York cop who's going to be doing some commentaries on the other episodes, was in that original MTV show. So we did 13 episodes of that, and it was, really kind of... I wouldn't say it was a failure, but it was kind of a strange sort of... And how about Leo non-event.
It had moments of greatness.
But it was kind of ridiculous because they just gave us like $20,000 an episode to make the whole show. So it was this kind of like almost like nobody even was aware that we were doing it at the network. And they let us do whatever we wanted to do. So we kind of figured it out as we went along.
I've often called it the precursor to the Larry Sanders Show.
Yes, it did have a similar setup in that it was about a guy who had his own show on MTV. And it was kind of like a Neanderthal version of the Larry Sanders Show.
It was a
caveman version.
It was you as the host of a MTV show, and then they would see you behind the scenes, and you were a bastard to everyone around you.
Yes, I was mean. Which is a theme I've come back to often in my life.
So it wasn't Carnegie Hall.
That's somewhere. Dave Madden.
That's Dave Madden from the Partridge Family, who was
Mr. Kincaid.
Very nice.
Yeah. So you want to talk, Judd, about how the pilot happened?
Well, what happened was I was online to see Elvis Costello Unplugged with a friend of mine, Dana Gould, and I met Ben online. And
by the way, this is pre-internet, so when we say online, we mean on a line.
We're
standing
outside.
On a line, outside.
We met in a lesbian chat room, and so we talked, and I don't know if we had any admiration for each other, because I don't think either of us had done anything, but Hollywood, hey, we both want to work, kind of positive energy. And then we bumped into each other at the Improv a few weeks later and had a brief talk about how HBO was looking for a sketch show to air on HBO. And we started kicking around an idea. And
yeah, that was like, it was a year and a half into the development process that I'd been in with Fox trying to get a show on the air. No, is that right? Yes, that is right.
That wasn't a sketch show. It was
no, but it was kind of a sketch show. It was Jeff Kahn and I were trying to do a sketch show that also had a storyline, which hasn't ever really been done, and there's a reason why, because it doesn't work. There's not really a way to do it. So we were trying to kind of fit in this sort of like it was almost like a sitcom and a sketch show, and we were going around in circles. We'd written two or three or four different versions of what it would be, and it kind of just it was basically dead.
Notice how much airtime we're giving Bruce Kirschbaum. If you ever wonder why we were canceled, this is our pilot, and we're just giving Bruce Kirschbaum just a lot of time on national television.
What were we doing?
We just found him funny and wanted him on screen.
Well, we were desperate, let's face it. Come on, we didn't... this was the third version of the pilot, wasn't it?
Yeah, the first...
Of this pilot. Not to mention... Not the sketch, the script I was talking about earlier. That was the Jeff Kahn and I version. Then that kind of totally died. And then you and I met at that Elvis Costello concert, and we started to... didn't we just, like, kind of come up with this idea of doing just, like, a straight-out sketch show, sort of?
Well, our first idea, which was, as kind of convoluted as you can get, is was Ben runs a film school, and his students make short films, and he also gives grants to people to make short films, and one of the things we said as a pitch was, for instance, a guy who directs porno would get a grant from Ben to show that he can make a well-crafted dramatic film, and then we would see this porno director's attempt to make a Disease of the Week movie, which was very serious, except whenever they talked about someone dying, you would hear like, and it would be all like porno sound effects and porno lighting. But
and strangely, they didn't go for it. Isn't that crazy?
That turned into Ben moves to Hollywood and is trying to break in Hollywood, and then we go to the sketches, which we shot. And
so we ended up pitching them that idea without a script.
Yes,
and they gave us a go ahead.
And they bought that, and then we had to meeting later, and they said, we like what you sold us, but can you do something completely different?
This was still when we were just working with HBO.
Yeah, this was to air on HBO.
HBO was going to put it on as a late night kind of, you know, comedy show. And then we did the sketches, and it started to come out good in terms of what the shorts were, but we still didn't have anything to tie it together.
We did the sketches, and I mean, we were conceiving ideas for sketches, but we hadn't shot anything. And before we had shot anything, then HBO decided to sell it to Fox because they had created a production company and wanted to get us off of their air.
Yeah, why did they want to do that?
I think they just were beginning to play around with the idea of producing shows for network television, and hey, let's try it with this thing, which was kind of a drag because we wanted to be on HBO.
Right. Which probably would have been worked out better for us.
And then we could have been like we could have been like Arliss or something. We'd be on forever. But then they sold it to Fox,
where we get our lunch,
and which was really kind of the funny moment because now it's a network television show,
hello.
And I've never even been on a TV show as a writer. I've just produced a couple of Tom Arnold specials and some stand-up specials.
Did we go into Fox and pitch it? Do you remember?
We did. We went and we got to pitch it to Peter Chernin and Joe Davola.
Right, Joe Davola, who I knew from MTV, who had done programming there at MTV, who was a really funny guy, who is a great guy. He and in his office, he always used to have just like an array of children's toys in front of him, and he'd like pick up like one of those children's, you know, like piano key things and just play with it in the middle of your pitch, which made you feel very at home and comfortable. Go ahead.
Well, so then what happened was we shot the first pilot for HBO where we had been moving to Hollywood and trying to intercut sketches with a storyline, and that didn't work, so we did another version of the pilot with the same sketches, but now it was Ben and his friends hanging out at a clubhouse introducing the sketches.
Yeah, we shot three different versions of the pilot that kept the same sketches in them.
And then finally, one day we said, none of this works, and we called up Fox and said, we have to just do this MTV style with Ben talking to people and just setting up the sketches and no story. And they said, fine. And I don't think HBO was very happy. I think we were supposed to call them first. We had a little political problem there. But we were young. We didn't know who you call first. We didn't know who you said things to that were positive or negative.
I'm sorry, that's my friend Harry O'Reilly and Melissa Justin. Harry had been on the MTV show in New York, and obviously he's familiar with martial arts. So then we ended up with, I think by the time we shot this version of the pilot, these little wraparound, little insert things, we basically were on our last leg with a network. Weren't they just saying basically, like, come up with something or it's not going to happen?
Well, there was a change in administration at the network after we were put on the fall schedule. And we were told very quickly, they don't get the show. The new guys don't get the show. And we said, really? What don't they get? They don't get Cape Munster. And I think we right then knew that we were creating television for airing in reruns on cable. I know that's what I always thought. Well, this is not going to last long. I mean, some really crazy notes started coming our way. For instance, on this sketch, the network note was, after this, can you cut to a store and there's a long line to buy the garden hose? And I didn't know that you couldn't say no to all the notes. Only later did I learn you're supposed to take a few to look like you respect the notes. But at the time, I thought you could say no to everything they said.
Was that people standing in line to buy the garden hose supposed to be like a punchline to the sketch or something?
That would be the button.
The button, because the people and the... Why? I don't get it.
I think because everyone felt they needed a garden hose.
Okay. Thanks for clearing that up.
I guess so. But maybe if we took that note, we would be on the air right now. That group,
me too. Not then we shot those little short I call them like little interstitial pieces. That's a word I got from working at MTV. Interstitial,
which we shot interstitial
Super 8
film, right?
Yes. We shot them on Super 8 film, and I just remember we went through a lot to finally get the pilot picked up, to the point when we got the pilot picked up, I just remember being so happy and excited that I didn't care what happened afterwards. I think the road to getting the show on the air was, with the 2 years before that I'd been working with Jeff, had been such a long process that by the time we actually got picked up, that was the victory, which is probably why we got canceled after 13 episodes. I didn't have the drive or something to keep it going.
Well, it was amazing that they were going to allow us to do this every week with our lack of experience. And the terrifying part was then realizing we didn't know how to make it. We had to hire writers and a staff to make this giant machine of comedy.
Yeah, I would imagine for you it was probably very daunting, just because they were kind of looking at you as the responsible producer. Like, I felt like I could focus on being the guy who's, you know, in it and directing things. That was a very kind of specific task to do, but you had to be sort of like, it's like the showrunner, basically, which is like a very responsible position.
Which is hard when you really have no idea how to do it. I would sit in my office reading Stephen Covey's book, 7 Principles of Centered Leadership, and just trying to figure out how to talk to a staff. I mean, I never had a staff. The only thing I had done in my career was kiss Bud Friedman's ass for spots at the Improv. So that was daunting, and then it was also scary to hire the writing staff.
And this basically took you away from your stand-up career, didn't it?
My stand-up career ended as soon as the show got picked up. I stopped doing stand-up.
Because you were a promising young stand-up, Judd. I remember traveling to Phoenix, Arizona to see you tape the HBO Young Comedian special in the presence of other young comedians such as
Ray Romano, Janine Garofalo,
all of catapulted
Bill Bellamy.
Excuse me, catapulted. And also catapulted. And catapulted.
I was, they all became huge stars, and I was thrown behind the camera afterwards.
Yeah.
I made a mistake on that Young Comedian special, which was, it was on HBO, and I thought, hey, I'm on HBO, I should curse a lot. But none of my jokes had curses, so I'd just throw the random curse in for no reason. Anyway, it didn't help.
It was a great idea.
But
you should never work blue, Judd.
Don't work blue.
After that, I quit the business. Hey, who needs you too? Let me tell you something.
But we hired the writers, and then I remember that Fox tried to fire me off of the show because they felt like I was hiring writers that I could control, and they wanted me to have more experienced writers. They were like, why can't you hire that guy who wrote for Saturday Night Live in 1975? And they were mad at me, and in fact, really mad about a writer who's here right now, Brent Forrester.
Who's watching but not saying anything.
And Brent Forrester's here, very, very funny man. And we hired him.
Not
as
funny as that shirt I'm wearing. Slick
kind of, you know, guy. Oh, nice.
What was I thinking?
Well, you know, it was a certain period in time, 1992. This is.
I felt I had to exemplify it, and I had to put it down on film that to really just timestamp the show.
Yeah, I'll be all day. Okay. Whew. So,
this is what a guy thought looked good in 1992.
Yet Tom Arnold's clothes hold up.
No, I know, exactly. Exactly.
Isn't it weird that Roseanne looks 20 years older there 10 years ago?
quit.
Yeah, she's you're right. She's looking great.
These,
well, she lost a lot of weight, didn't she?
She's lost a lot of weight.
You have to
clean it all up.
Okay, you have to explain how Roseanne and Tom are even in this show, because everybody was doing a favor, basically for you.
This was one thing that I was proud of, which was I was able to suck everybody onto the show who I had written stand-up jokes for. So Tom and Roseanne and Gary Shandling.
You kind of had a very thriving career as a writer for stand-up stars such as Roseanne.
If you were an overweight woman from Utah and you needed jokes, I was going to be the guy you were going to call in 1991. That was my reputation. I was going to define Tom Arnold's persona. I had given up on my own stand-up and had decided to just write for other people.
And you were like writing Tom Arnold's HBO specials, right? Like I remember you threw me a job in Tom's HBO special.
You know, that you got to admit that those were great days when you were very excited for me to ask you onto a Tom Arnold special.
I'm so honestly grateful that Tom and Roseanne and Gary Shandling did this. I mean, because really, who were we? What were we doing? We asked them to come in and spend 3 hours to do, right? At least 3 hours. They were there at least 3 hours.
Oh, and they were hilarious and really willing to goof on themselves so hard. And Roseanne and Tom are really funny and have been incredibly nice to us.
Yeah, for a pilot that might not get on the air and show that nobody cared about. And they came in and did it. And I think that's great.
And the same for Gary Shandling, who came on later and did another episode. To do two episodes of a show that aired at 7:30 against 60 Minutes. You know, that's very nice.
There he is. There he is. An incredible boxer. People don't know that about Gary Shandling.
And this is actually Chris Albrecht's office at HBO, because we couldn't really afford sets, so we shot it in his office.
That's right. And who's, let's see, there's...
Flavor Flav?
Flavor Flav, and who's the kid on the left? He's the kid from Doogie Howser's Friend.
Yeah, so we have David Faustino's picture on the other side.
Right. And that was Chris's actual furniture.
I think that's still what he has there.
Yeah. Which keep saying that doesn't date this at all either.
they keep saying you should hang a Sopranos poster. He goes, no, I like the Flavor Flav.
And this is all Gary improvising, of course.
And then what's funny that happened with the show is they put us on at 7:30 after a show called Great Scott, which was actually a pretty funny show that starred Spider-Man. Tobey Maguire, and I remember in those days whenever there was a Fox party, Leo DiCaprio would always be running around, a young little teen Leo DiCaprio and Tobey Maguire.
Who was the costume designer who said it was okay for me to wear that shirt? And why does Bob's shirt not look dated at all either?
Bob has got a timeless thing happening, the glasses, the shirt, the pants. I'm not as concerned about that shirt as you are.
It looks like one of those facial scrub loofah things that my wife has in the bathroom.
All I know is that the only time I appear on the show, I'm not wearing a shirt, and the joke said about me is Judd, nice sweater, because I have so much hair on my body.
Right. Oh, yeah, we mentioned that. We did that in the other commentary. Okay, now I just have to say, at the last minute, I'm just going to put down on DVD here that I regret doing this sketch. I feel bad because I think it was unfair to Yakov Smirnoff, because this was a last minute replacement sketch. Do you remember? They nixed a sketch. I don't remember what the sketch was, but we had to put this sketch, and we had to put another sketch in for the pilot because we were short, and we put this in.
That's usually what would happen. If they didn't like a sketch...
And it's too long. The only thing, I think it's like a funny idea, and it's a funny quick thing, but it goes on way too long.
That would always happen. If they didn't like a sketch, we would always replace it with something 15 times more offensive. And
I want to offer my personal apology to Yakov Smirnoff, because it's just unfair and, you know... It's ridiculous.
Yakov Smirnoff's career was suffered as a result of the end of communism in his native land, and we're mocking his fear
for
his future.
It's just like I would mock this sketch for going on too long, because we had to fill a time. I think it would have been a good, like, 30-second.
But the mistake of it is we usually satirize people that we really liked, and you could tell we were fond of U2 or Metallica. And not that we disliked Yakov Smirnoff, I don't think we cared either way, but we certainly enjoyed making this the darkest piece of comedy you've ever seen. Yeah. And then in the review, I remember Tom Shales was like, how dare Ben Stiller attack a seasoned performer like Yakov Smirnoff? Who is he? His parents are famous, so he gets a show and he makes fun of Yakov Smirnoff?
Yeah, but on this one he's right. My dentist loved this sketch because it really got to show off his work.
And then he said he was going to pretend he was from China and do jokes about communism in China.
Ooh, Tom Shales?
Is that what Yako Smirnoff says in the sketch? I'm part Chinese. I'm doing the Schmengis.
Sorry. Stan Schmengi. We should talk about, I mean, that was also the show that we were influenced by / ripping off was SCTV, because I loved that show. And you love that show, too.
Everything on the show is just SCTV with a little more money for production values.
Yeah, SCTV wannabe TV. That's what this is.
And proud to do it. They still are the funniest guys around.
I am frightened. What will the New World Order bring for Yakov?
It's the last stand of Yakov's.
If anybody wants to see the funniest sketch show ever made of all time, you should watch SCTV. I mean, they did four or five seasons, and it definitely ranged, they had peaks and valleys, but for the most part, almost everything they did was just incredible.
Now, watch this, because Jean Triplehorn is about to fall really hard on her face.
Oh, yeah. There she goes.
And straight, and that's a real face plant. That's not something we rehearsed.
Let's talk about how we did the opening of the show, because remember we paid some company a lot of money to do the show open, which is the credits, and we shot the footage for them, and then the idea was we give it to them, and they edit it together and do cool graphic things, and we ended up just editing it ourselves.
Well, they were charging us by the hour on a Harry, and it was an enormous amount of money. Well,
explain what a Harry is.
It's just Kirschbaum
again.
Kirschbaum, we love him. And I remember we said to him, he said, we gave you a good deal on this. And I said, yeah, but we need to fix it. It's not good enough yet. And he says, well, that's it. There's no more passes. I said, well, but you said it would be great. He goes, hey, when you pay for a Cadillac, you get a Cadillac. If you paid for a Rolls Royce, you would have got a Rolls Royce.
That's good business. I'll tell you. That's a great attitude. You know, when you're doing a show like this, like a pilot, basically, if it doesn't get picked up, no one in the world will ever see it. So people aren't really super motivated to bend over backwards to help you out on a show that they'll make a judgment, I think, in their minds about whether or not they think the thing is going to actually see the light of day.
I remember the first day of shooting, I believe you were doing Tom Cruise Live on Broadway, which airs in the second episode, and improvising your brains out as Tom Cruise doing Don Rickles-type jokes.
Right.
And I remember the crew looked like the crew who probably shot Midnight Cowboy and couldn't believe they wound up on that crew. Just
what you're saying is
what's going on here?
What you're saying is I wasn't cracking them up. I didn't have them in the palm of my hand.
I like that because that's real anger when you walk off.
Oh, yeah.
All right, farewell.
Okay, goodbye.